Brian, you want to come up here now, please? Brian Wilson, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here, and thank you, Frank, for putting this event on. Thank you all the speakers who have already said basically what I could say and more. I have been incredibly emotional for the last few months. I live up in a small town in Arcata, California, where every Friday our Veterans for Peace chapter vigils on the plaza in silence with the women in black to our in the other corner of the plaza. And the silence has been more healing to me than talking, and so I actually haven't been speaking that much. I've been, of course, reflecting and talking to lots of people in small groups. But I felt so emotional, I'm never sure what I'm going to be able to say and whether I'll be able to keep my composure. And to ground myself right now, I think I will just tell you how my initial awakening happened. I was like Ron Kovic and so many others, I was just a regular guy, but I was from a small farming community of 350 people in upstate New York. And I thought that America was the greatest country in the history of the world. I, unlike Joel, didn't have any ambivalence. I was a total believer in everything that our government said, my church said, that my parents said, that my school said, and it was a wonderful story. It was an incredible story. How could you complain about it? It was like a fairy tale. And in fact, it is a make-believe story. But it took me a long time to figure it out. And the way it happened was, I happened to be in Vietnam in 1969, seemingly in a relatively safe position. I was an Air Force officer in charge of a security unit that was protecting an airbase 100 miles south of Saigon. So I wasn't out in the boonies looking to kill people. We were defending ourselves from attacks, so we were always on the defensive. I had 40 men, and we had 10 machine guns, we had mortars, we were well defended. But my boss, who was a Vietnamese colonel, asked me to do an extra duty for him. He said that some of his South Vietnamese pilots were missing their targets. And I hadn't thought too much about the bombing and the targets. I'd only been there like 3 weeks. And I was basically very studiously studying intelligence reports to make sure that we could secure the base from attacks from all sides. And he said he wanted me to go with one of his lieutenants, whose name was Bo, a Vietnamese lieutenant who was educated in Mississippi, who spoke good English. And he wanted us to go, partly because his Jeep had been blown up and I still had my Jeep intact, and he needed somebody to go to these villages after the airstrikes and do a ground assessment of the bombings, of whether these targets had been hit or not. And the targets, it turns out, were villages. The very first village that we went to was in April of 1969, and I didn't know how to get to it, but Bo directed me on these dirt roads along the Bosak River. And we were there within 10 or 15 minutes of the end of the bombing. And this whole village had been virtually destroyed. It wasn't very difficult. They're like mounds in the rice paddies. There's no vegetation. There were no guns there. There was no defenses. It was 11 o'clock in the morning, and two planes or three planes could unload their few bombs and their napalm bombs and destroy everybody. So the scene I saw was probably about 120 corpses or bodies lying on the ground, and maybe 60 of them were dead. I couldn't tell for sure. But at my feet, there was a woman who was holding, was trying to hold three children. She'd obviously had been fleeing the bombing, and all of a sudden they were 2 feet from my feet, and her eyes were open. And I thought maybe she was alive, so I bent over. And I started crying. And, of course, they were dead, but the napalm had burned off their skin and their eyelids. And I was gagging. And Bo, this Vietnamese lieutenant, asked me what my problem was. And, of course, I had never been in this place before. This was a brand new place for me. Never have I ever experienced anything like this. I didn't have any plan. This was just what came out. And I said something in response to Bo's question, which has mystified me to this day, but it also has taken me into deep places of consciousness. I said, without even thinking, looking at these people on the ground, I said, "This is my family." Now, I was from a lower working class family in upstate New York. My father was a Fuller brush salesman. You know, there was no intellectual discussion in my family. There was no questioning going on. I don't know where that came from at that moment, except from some very ancient place that was a truth. We really are all family. We are all part of the human family. And he laughed and said, "This was a victory. These were all communists." And it just didn't mean anything to me from that point on. It was just a worthless ideological conditioning. And I realized at that point, standing there, I was cognizant of not where that answer came from, but I was cognizant that I was no longer one of the good guys on the planet, and that I was... I had a lot of karma that I had to deal with. It was really pretty unbelievable that I could have followed an order to go halfway around the world. I know a lot of vets might feel this way, but this is really how I experienced it, because I had been a good student in my school. I had been valedictorian, honor society, student council. I'm supposed to know something. I'm supposed to be able to ask questions. And I realized that I was very disabled. That was the word that came to me. I'm very disabled because I can't see. I haven't been trained to see. I just felt so unbelievably ashamed that I was standing in that village. It was not my village. It was these people's village. And I was 10,000 miles from my hometown. How could that be? So shortly thereafter, I happened to find a book in the library at my little airbase. The book was entitled "The United States in Vietnam" by Cahin and Lewis, two Cornell University professors. And I read that book, and I couldn't believe that I didn't know anything about the history of Vietnam or the French and the U.S. intervention in Vietnam. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was all the way over to Vietnam. I already had a master's degree. I was already a commissioned officer. I was 27 years old, and I didn't know anything about how the French Indochina War ended and how the United States sabotaged the peace, how we manufactured South Vietnam, we created a fiction, and then we brought DM from the United States, from a Mary Knoll Seminary in New Jersey, to Vietnam to be our man. So that was an incredible moment. That all happened in like a week. where I was like, I was in shock that we were destroying systematically all these villages in the Mekong Delta. Every village was targeted. Every village was targeted for bombing. They would just do three or four every day. And so that was the beginning of my awakening. It wasn't maybe not a typical experience, but each Vietnam vet has a different experience and a different history. It just depends on where you were and when you were there and what you were doing. I spoke out against the war, of course, and I was sent home after 151 days with many court-martial charges against me, all for sedition. They even brought a lawyer from Canto City, an army lawyer, to read me my rights at this little air base. I was just like, I mean, I was talking about Nuremberg. I was talking about Army Reg 2710 that says you're not supposed to kill civilians and civilian targets. I knew that much. It kind of came out. Like, wow, we're committing war crimes. That isn't what I came here to do. And then, of course, as I started studying history, I really did realize about the make-believe story of this civilization, how we stole the land at gunpoint, we stole the labor at gunpoint, and we stole the resources at gunpoint from all over the world. We have built an entire civilization on a lie, on a series of lies and pretexts that sound very noble, sound very, very rational and very justifiable. I spent many years traveling to Latin America and to the Middle East, studying the history and nature of U.S. policy, and I'd come home, and I would try to talk to my own family, and it was not possible. They could not comprehend the cruelty and the bellicosity of what the United States policies were doing, either overtly or covertly. I mean, it really is hard for people to grasp how incredibly demonic Western civilization has been, and not just the United States. And so we've been given a cosmic gift, I believe, in disguise with George Bush. I mean, really, 9/11 and Bush's response to it is like, I believe it's like a cosmic gift that's been given to us just in time to get it, to get that we have been really butchering the planet for centuries. We have been murdering people for centuries, most of us not even knowing it. Not even thinking about it. Don't even want to think about it. Why would you want to upset this fairy tale? I mean, it really was a wonderful story. It just wasn't true, and it isn't true. And this is, as Ron and others have said, this is a pivotal evolutionary moment in human history, and it is a moment both of dark peril and of incredible, unusual opportunity to, in a sense, undo and redo culture, Western culture at least. This is not just an anti-war movement. We have to build a justice movement, and we have to go beyond and articulate a vision for the alternative. And this vision, I don't think, includes nation-state structures. This vision includes taking our responsibility as human beings and letting our imaginations liberate our imaginations that have been so locked up for so long, very conditioned to fit certain patterns of life. Now we know that what our way of life will do will destroy the planet. We know it. You can see it right at the end of your nose. You can see that Western civilization is at its end, and that violence and war is going to kill not only our species, but, of course, many other species, and it already has. So we've learned something, and we've had 30 years of people talking about this demythologizing the make-believe version of our civilization. We've had Chomsky and Zinn and lots of other speakers and vets and ex-CIA agents who finally have been talking about, it took Vietnam, I think. It took the humiliation of Vietnam to our nation to open up in the psyche this willingness to begin telling the truth, this terrible truth. It's like, God, I didn't even want to acknowledge the truth for several years. It was so painful to realize, as I studied U.S. history, and as I studied world history, and then I studied anthropology to study the history of human evolution, and then I studied physics and got into quantum physics, trying to understand all the levels, all the dimensions of life. I studied Jungian psychology, also was a patient often with Jungian psychiatrists, just in my own healing process, learning about my shadow and how shadows get projected on other people. And that works for nations too. Everything that we say about Iraq or Saddam Hussein is our own shadow. We're looking at the images of ourself when we project them on others. So really is an extraordinary moment to be alive. As emotional as I have been feeling, I told my therapist this, I feel like I'm in suspended animation, like my head is hanging in such a way that my artificial legs are dangling off the ground, and that my body's kind of in a quiver, and that I'm seeing two trains coming towards each other, the biological evolution and cultural evolution coming at breakneck speed for this big collision. And that I'm hoping that we, as human beings, especially in the West, especially in the United States, can create a new culture, a new consciousness that will at least cause a sideswipe rather than a head-on collision, so that we might actually survive whatever Bush is going to do. Maybe in the next 2 weeks there will be far more things happening in the movement in the United States that we can't even predict right at this moment, because things are happening so fast. And if you study chaos theory, you've probably heard about the butterfly effect. Basically, very small incidents can create huge implications that can't be predicted. The metaphor is the butterfly that flaps its wings in Brazil creates a tornado in Texas. That's how the physicists try to explain it. And if you study quantum physics, you realize that at the subatomic level, there's so many energy fields that we're all part of, that we have not even been, you know, we've been operating as if we're in this kind of Newtonian material world, but there's also this spiritual world. There's this new understanding of how the cosmos works and how we're all part of it. And we've been living as if we're separate from it. And so this paradigm shift is pretty staggering. It's pretty powerful, because it puts us back into harmony with the whole cosmos, the energy fields of the cosmos from which we've always been part of. And if sometimes people ask me, what is my vision of the future? And I say, well, I'm now living in a small farming community in Northern California, so I don't have to drive much. I cycle everywhere on my hand cycle, except I did drive to Los Angeles. And I don't like to fly. And that I'm trying to rediscover what it was like to live in a Neolithic village with Buddhist economics and appropriate technology kind of synthesized in a bioregion. So I have a bioregional address. It's the Mad River Watershed in northern Humboldt County. Trying to actually conceptualize this manner in which we really are living with the earth. The mother is our is our teacher. Indigenous people are our teachers. Silence is our teachers. It's amazing to us vets that stand in silence on the plaza in this little arcata how much power we feel by standing in silence for just 1 hour a day.